So why build railways rather than other forms of transport? Well, this is really part of a global rail revolution that started in the United Kingdom in the 1830s and spread throughout Western Europe and the eastern part of the United States in the 1840s and 1850s, and they often talked of railway mania in these countries. There was a huge rush to invest in railways as a way to make money, and there were a lot of dodgy schemes, especially in places like in the United States, and a lot of corruption involved with it. But New Zealand was a latecomer to the railway building in many ways. By 1870, countries like Britain, France, Germany, many countries in Europe have these huge nationwide networks. The whole country is covered by railways by that stage. The United States has just completed the Transcontinental Railway from the Atlantic to the Pacific in 1869. And the United States has 50,000 kilometres of railroads, as they call them, by 1870. New Zealand's got 70 kilometres. By that stage, Australia, India, even Cuba has got a railway. And most settlers in New Zealand have come from the UK, and those who arrived in the 1840s, 50s and 60s, many of them are familiar with railways from back in Britain, and many of them began their voyage to New Zealand by a train journey to their port of departure. So there's a clamour to build railways. A lot of New Zealanders are quite familiar with them. They understand the potential for them to transform the country. I mean, it's hard today to understand the excitement, really, that railways generate at this time. Kind of like space travel, perhaps, in the 1960s, or today there's a lot of talk about, you know, ultra-fast broadband and things like that as a way of generating economic growth. The British historian Christian Walmer has argued that railways were the most important invention of the last 1,000 years. Because they were the first of these complex technological systems that we've come to take for granted and have really shaped the modern world ever since. The electric telegraph and steamships were being developed around the same time, and they have a similar importance, but they're not as complex as railways as a system. And really no other, you could argue that no other technological innovation has been so new or so different when it was introduced. I mean, think about everything else that's come since, like photography, movies, cars, you know, the everyday electrical appliances like these ones, telephones, aeroplanes, radio, TV, computers, spacecraft, mobile phones. They all come after railways. They all rely on the similar complex systems that were railways pioneered. And they all built upon earlier developments. You could argue email and text messaging are just faster, better versions of the electric telegraph, which has been around for 150 years. Personal computer with an internet connection is some sort of combination of a typewriter, TV, and telegraph or telephone. Most inventions, of course, build on what already exists. And so did railways, of course, in that horses had pulled wagons on rails before that, and there were steam engines that were stationary that were used for various functions. But no one could argue that the railway is just a new version of a horse and cart. This was a quantum leap. Before the steam engine, the most complex machines were sailing ships and things like windmills and water wheels. The concept was so new that people in the 1830s in Britain, some people thought human beings wouldn't be able to survive travelling at 50 kilometres an hour, that they wouldn't be able to breathe. No one really had, so no one had ever gone that fast, faster than a horse or a galloping horse or a sailing ship. But the railways that Vogel was proposing to build wouldn't really be like those in Britain or France, unfortunately, not for a long time, or even the eastern coast of the United States. In Europe, of course, railways connected already densely populated areas, and they augmented or replaced roads, canals, river transport. New Zealand model was much more like the western, middle and west of the United States, where very simple railways were built cheaply and quickly as possible to open up new areas for settlement, with the idea that later on they could be improved as more people moved in and more traffic was generated. Now, unlike Britain and Europe, for example, what New Zealand didn't have was a lot of capital and a lot of labour. What it did have compared to those countries was that land was quite cheap here compared to the United Kingdom. So rather than build the shortest routes, which they tried to do in Britain, generally with railways, and therefore have expensive earthworks, have big cuttings and tunnels, big bridges, it made more sense in New Zealand, as in the United States, to build longer winding routes that generally went around obstacles, around mountains and hills if they could, and to build cheaper wooden trestle bridges, which looked flimsy but were actually very solid, and to use tighter curves and steeper gradients. And this is true of the United States and Australia and many places that were building sort of these frontier railways. And this, as well as the desire to build cheaply and quickly as possible, also explains why their government chose this narrow gauge of 3 foot 6 inches, which is just over a metre, which is quite different than this is the width of the tracks, quite different than most places in the world, which are wider. But the government's decision at least avoided the problems that happened in Australia, where each of the colonies built different gauges, and they've had enormous problems ever since in creating a national railway network. And it's also more evidence of the growing power of a central government in New Zealand to make decisions like that. Now, the excitement about railways was is also reflected in the ceremonies around their construction and opening. And this happened in America and Europe as well. They had what they called first sod ceremonies, where people would, some politician or dignitary would ceremonially dig some soil and put it in a wheelbarrow, and they'd wheel it off and dump it, and then the actual workers would start work. This is 1873. This is part of the railway between Christchurch and Dunedin. This is a section that was being started from Oamaru. And this one is quite a famous ceremony. This is a bit later, 1885. This is near Te Awamutu, the beginning of the central section of the North Island Main Trunk Line. And also, this was the first sod ceremony as well. And also, they had last spike ceremonies where someone would hammer in the last, and they often had a special silver or gold spike, and hammer it into a sleeper to signal the completion of the railway. And these things were accompanied by banquets, endless speeches, you know, champagne, flags, tents, brass bands, cavalry, firing of cannons, all sorts. For Pākehā settlers in these places, these things were symbols of prosperity, of you know, future prosperity, symbols that they were being linked up to the wider world, and sort of promising that their region would be a region that would grow and develop in the future. And sometimes there was almost a religious reverence. This happened at this ceremony, that afterwards people would rush in and grab the bits of dirt as souvenirs and take them away. Don't know what they did, they put them on their mantelpieces at home.